You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's live broadcast of TPC this Saturday evening, March the 6th. Yes, we're already into March, and I am really excited about tonight's show. We're under attack, as you know. We talked about that last week. I'll update you on that later in the show. In the second hour tonight, we'll talk a little more about that, but I'm not going to leave you hanging. The early news is good news. The early news is good news. Of course, you know, and I don't need to remind you, I'm never going to give up. I'm never going to stop fighting. I couldn't do it even if I wanted to. It's just not in my DNA to stop fighting. We're going to continue on until God himself calls us home. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to win. We are fighting the biggest dragons in the land, and one day they will fall. And we'll be here to see it. If not us, our descendants. We will win this thing. We are in this together. There are a few organizations out there worthy of your support, but I don't think there is any organization in existence that is talking about the topics and has the same mission that we do, that has a more intimate and personable and familial relationship with its audience than here at TPC. And boy, I've known that for years and years, and it has been reinforced in ways you couldn't imagine. Just in the last week, the early returns after our announcement last week have been incredible. And again, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk to you a little bit more about that later in the show. We're going to be toggling our lineup a little bit here throughout the month of March, because it is officially our march around the world. It begins tonight, and because we're going to be facilitating and accommodating guests far-reaching time zones, we'll be getting away from our standard format where Keith and I cover the news and the headlines of the week in the first hour, then we go to our featured guests, and then the third hour is a utility hour. We're going to be sort of, playing with that each week, depending on who and where the guest is. But get your passports ready, because that march around the world begins tonight. During this special series, of course, as you know, we're going to showcase leaders and elected officials from different European nations as we seek to discover how our kinsmen are faring throughout the Western world. And we're going to punch your ticket tonight, ladies and gentlemen, to the United Kingdom and Australia, when British barrister Adrian Davis and Professor Andrew Fraser join us to report from their respective ports of call. It's going to be a month of broadcasting you won't forget as we bounce around Europe and beyond with some of our people's greatest representatives. This is what this series, and then of course going in next month to April in our Confederate History Month series, that annual tribute to the South, the good guys in the Civil War. We're going to be doing that, Lincoln's War Between the States, excuse me. We're going to be getting into that next month. So 2 months of special programming coming your way. But Keith, I got to tell you, my friend, I've got a little extra pep in my step tonight. I'm excited about the guests. I'm excited about what we're doing this month. And I'll tell you, we really are going around the world tonight, the UK and Australia. But before this month is over, we're going to talk to leading lights in Germany, Sweden, Croatia, Ireland, Canada, and beyond. Hold on, let me get you going. That's why we always check that. Okay, go, buddy.
Okay, I was saying tonight is exclusively the Anglosphere. We're getting England, merry old England, the homeland, with Adrian Davis, or Davies, I guess, and then Andrew Fraser from that far-flung outpost of the Anglosphere, Australia. But they're going to have It's going to be fun to see just exactly what their takes are, if they're the same, if they're different, if they're entirely different. We're loaded up and ready for bear with this, okay? This is what we prepared for this show, believe it or not. So
yeah, we always prepare. But, no, I think you could say we are extra prepared for what we're going to be doing this month. I think it's interesting. I think it's unique. And we're actually going to be hitting the U.K. a couple, three times this month because, of course, it is those nations, Wales, England, Ireland, and Scotland. Well, not so much New Zealand, but I guess I was going to say from the nations from which we can trace our line most directly, England, Wales, Scotland, Ireland, the United Kingdom. And so we're going to have multiple guests on from the U.K.
Don't forget Scotland.
Oh, yeah, no, I said it. And of course, Scotland. And we'll have multiple guests on from the U.K. this month. But it all starts. Adrian Davis is going to kick us off, and he's going to be kicking us off at the top of the next segment. And he's staying up past midnight over there. Good friend of ours and a great leader for our people. But I'll tell you, there is so much news to cover, Keith. I don't even know where to start. We got a lot of news to cover this month. Of course, we're going to be talking about just what a grotesque, cartoonish, unserious government we have. They were holding some sort of a hearing this week to talk about how there was supposed to be 50,000 3%ers that were going to come and sack Washington on Thursday. Completely fabricated, completely made up, completely unserious. But if you want to see who the real domestic terrorists are, if you want to see who the real insurrectionists are, you just wait, because the trial of Officer Derek Chauvin in Minneapolis of George Floyd infamy, that's going to kick off next week, Keith. And you just wait until he gets acquitted. If justice is served and he gets acquitted, you'll see who the terrorists are. That's going to be something we're going to be keeping a keen eye on. And then, of course, the COVID thing, Keith. COVID, as usual, the South was right. The South is right. Texas and Mississippi dropped all these restrictions this week, and the dominoes have started to fall. You're seeing this narrative really start to melt like the Wicked Witch, I guess you could say, as a friend of mine told me. And West Virginia, Arizona, a lot of other states are following suit.
Well, you tell you the truth, this could be the beginning of a secession movement. Basically, by not going along with the Joe Biden administration's typical take on COVID and saying we've had enough of it, we're basically declaring ourselves sanctuary states from the COVID nonsense. And that's the beginning of declaring ourselves sanctuary from the Second Amendment. Anything else, anything that gets passed by the Democratic-controlled Congress is going to be, reacted to in that way, I think. And it's just going to snowball. The whole thing is going to snowball. The more they do, the more pushback they're going to get from the South. Well, it's really not pushback. What they're going to say is, include us out, as Sam Goldwyn, the famous movie mogul, said back in the 40s. We're going to just include us out.
I just want to say one more thing. In the second hour, when Keith and I are covering the news or the interesting headlines of the week, we're doing that in the second hour tonight. Again, we're sort of going to be switching up the lineup order, our regular lineup with regard to the content we cover in each hour. Our regular lineup is going to be a little bit amended this month to facilitate and accommodate our guests. But we will be talking more about the COVID situation. We're going to be talking more about Officer Chauvin. That trial begins on Monday. Boy, 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 that's going to be interesting. And speaking of the South, I just want to mention very quickly, we had a listener, a longtime listener of the show from South Dakota, drive all the way down to Memphis just to break bread with Keith and I for a couple of hours. And I would just want to give Kevin a big shout out. What a great guy, meeting him for the first time. That's the kind of loyalty and dedication our audience has. He's a great guy. We're happy to serve him. We'll be right back with Adrian Davis.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The calm before the storm. By a friend of Medjugorje, the strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q, the calm before the storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Ladies and gentlemen, our march around the world has officially commenced, and our first stop on this world tour is the city of London, where we find our good friend Adrian Davis, who was born at Templecombe in Somerset, a largely agricultural county in the west of England, but he grew up in the outer suburbs of London, educated at Cambridge University, the Sorbonne in Paris, and University College in London. For many years, Adrian has served as a barrister. Now, that's a trial lawyer, the kind who get to wear a horsehair wig and a black stuff gown to court, who, over the course of his 30-year career, has represented amongst many normie clients a clutch of political dissidents. Adrian has spent the last 40 years trying to teach populists and nationalists in Great Britain to conduct themselves in ways likely to win over rather than repel normies, and he's still trying. Adrian, thank you for being with us tonight and staying up so late. It's great to have you.
James, thank you for inviting me, and I was panicking earlier because I looked at the time in Nashville and found that it was in fact an hour ahead of the time I thought you were calling me. Then I looked back at your email and discovered for some reason you're working on East Coast time, although you're in Tennessee, which kind of confused me, but here we are, thank heavens.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on there. Maybe I was just trying to give you the East Coast time to lessen the rigors of adding that extra hour. But in any event, we are here. And Adrian, as I often say...
I think it's much more fun next Saturday because you changed the summertime on the 14th of March and we changed the summertime on the 28th of March.
Well, that's going to blow my plan, actually.
Many thousands of planes have departed without their passengers at that time of year, owing to people making mistakes. Yes, but
well,
here we
Robert
are.
Robert Burns said, "The best laid plans of mice and men off going climb."
Right? Yeah.
Doesn't matter in England at the moment, because you may know we now have laws forbidding you from leaving the country without the license of the government, so nobody's flying anywhere pretty well.
Well, we'll get into that either with you tonight or with Peter Rushton. We have had, Adrian, a lot of questions come in for our UK guests that are going to be appearing over the course of this month. But I just wanted to start with this because we've got a lot I want to cover with you. And always so little time in commercial radio. I always say when talking with someone from London, of course, we can remember the old saying, there was a time during which the sun never set on the British Empire. Now, unfortunately, our friends and brothers don't even control the streets of London. You heard that triumphant anthem, an anthem that was written at a time when our people were confident and dominant. Is there a future? Is there a timeline where we can see our people going back and being that way once more?
Or is England going to become what they predicted after World War II, the cottage by the sea?
Well, I'm actually not quite such an enthusiast for empire as some are. There's a very the empire did very little in its day for 99% of British people. There's a very funny story about a conservative canvasser in the East End of London in the days of Disraeli, when the empire was pretty well at its apogee, knocking on the door of an elector. Now, in those days, the franchise would have been confined to householders, a very small proportion of the population. So this would have been one of the wealthier people in the area. He says the elector would be voting Conservative at the general election. He says, well, why would I do that? Well, sir, says the canvasser, you live in an empire on which the sun never sets. No, says the elector, I live in an alley on which the sun never rises. And the British Empire... The British Empire did no more good for the average Briton than the overseas de facto possessions. The United States, claiming to be an anti-imperialist power, doesn't have an empire. It's just always had lots of countries that it's controlled, and that, as you would appreciate, is very different from an empire. The difference is perhaps a little metaphysical, but it does the ordinary American no good whatsoever. The United States exercises de facto suzerainty over who knows how many countries all over the world. On the contrary, all it does is drain the American taxpayer of money, and much worse, when they have the wars, drains the ordinary American, often a white rural southerner, of his life or a limb or something like that to rule Iraq or Afghanistan or some other godforsaken hellhole from which, frankly, we were well rid, and you would be well rid too.
Well, Adrian, this is Keith Alexander, and I understand you're from the home counties now, by the way, which is where my mother was from. She's from Hertfordshire.
That's on the other side of London, north side.
Well, what I was going to say is that our foreign policy was supposedly MAGA, Make America Great Again, but it was really MIGA, Make Israel Great Again. Now, Israel benefits greatly from our foreign policy, but the average American, not so much, as you said.
No, and quite apart from that particular issue, and obviously I'm no enthusiast for Israel. Israel was a state founded by men who murdered large numbers of British soldiers and policemen and large numbers of Arab women and children in order to create their state. There's no particular reason for us to love it. The story of the British Mandate in Palestine and the activities of the various Zionist terrorist groups against it is something which is not generally dwelt upon by historians here, because it takes you down all kinds of dangerous paths, shall we say. But it was
like the King David Hotel bombing.
Yeah, it's like the King David Hotel massacre, for example, and that's just one of them. There are many such episodes during British mandatory rule in Palestine. The attempt to maintain a fair balance between the interests of the Arab and Jewish populations ended up with a critical outcome of antagonizing both, which is often what happens when you try to maintain a fair balance between people. But, in fairness, I think, to President Trump, one of his achievements was keeping America out of any more neo colonial wars. So when you say that MAGA didn't amount to what it was supposed to amount to, actually, I'd give President Trump great credit for some aspects of his foreign policy, not his building up of Israel even more, but at least for avoiding any more foreign wars. President Biden seems to be quite keen to start those at the moment, from what I can see.
Well, he talks out of both sides of his mouth, but of course, so did Donald Trump on that.
Well, when you're senile, that does happen a little more often than not. Adrian, I wanted to ask you this very quickly before we take our first break, because I think it's an important question. And a yes or no answer will suffice, because when we come back, I'm going to ask you a little more about the inner workings of patriotic nationalist groups in the UK. But yeah, it's not so much about rebuilding or reclaiming the empire. I don't have much interest in governing having Hong Kong be part of what we're doing, but it would be nice to control our ancestral homelands again. So with regard to the rule, Britannia and all that, is there a way, do you see a way forward where we get that indomitable mindset back? Can our people reclaim that?
Well, you're absolutely right. It begins with a mindset. If you internalize an ideology of egalitarianism, yeah.
Keep talking.
Well, actually, we are about to take a break. So when we come back, though, we'll pick up right there. Now, Adrian's got it right. Adrian's learned what we haven't learned in 16 years. When the music starts, you start to taper down.
Learn to break the rules and follows them.
Well, listen, the mindset is important. The mindset, we have to regain that confident, that masculine, that dominant, indomitable mindset again if we're going to reclaim at least our nations. Forget the empire. Let's take our nations back. We'll be right back with Adrian.
Pursuing liberty. Using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
The Senate has passed President Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID relief plan. The bill passed Saturday morning along party lines by a 50-49 vote. Following the measure's passage, President Biden thanked those senators who voted for it, saying it was something the country urgently needed.
I want to thank all of the senators who worked so hard to reach a compromise, to do the right thing for the American people during this crisis, and voted to pass the American Rescue Plan. It obviously wasn't easy. It wasn't always pretty, but it was so desperately needed, urgently needed.
The package now goes back to the House for reconciliation and is expected to be on the president's desk this coming week. Biden and congressional Democrats had wanted to get the measure into law before federal unemployment insurance expired later this month. This is USA Radio News.
When thinking about life insurance, my accident reinforced you never know what tomorrow might bring. That's why I reached out to AccuQuote. AccuQuote helps people find a life insurance policy that meets their needs. Since 1986, they've helped millions of folks save up to 60% on their life insurance by comparing the rates and features of dozens of top-rated life insurance products. A healthy 50-year-old non-smoker can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $45 a month. A 60-year-old under $120 a month. Longer or permanent terms are available. Even if you already own life insurance, you really need to check out my friends at AccuQuote. Don't worry about health issues. Remember, they help me. As a pastor, I'm concerned about your soul and helping you to make sure your family is taken care of. Life insurance is more affordable now than ever, so don't make them wish you'd made that call. 877-437-4781. Call now, 877-437-4781. 877-437-4781.
Rates, policy points, and availability vary by state.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott is taking on big tech political censorship. John Clemens reports from the USA Radio News Texas Bureau.
The legislation would help prohibit social media companies from censoring the viewpoints expressed by Texans.
Conservative speech will not be canceled in the state of Texas. Yeah. We need to recognize, in Texas, maybe in particular in Texas, we see that the First Amendment is under assault by these social media companies, and that is not going to be tolerated in Texas.
Governor Greg Abbott also said websites like Facebook and Twitter have evolved into a modern-day public square, but said those platforms have begun controlling the flow of information. From the USA Radio News Texas Bureau, I'm John Clemens.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis proposed a similar measure last month, introducing a bill that would fine tech platforms that suspended political candidates. This is USA Radio News.
welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, very much an honor to have my good friend Adrian Davis, who has spent a lifetime working in for nationalist causes and has been a leader for our people in the U.K. For longer than I've been alive, and he helps us kick off the market around the world.
That's not cheered me greatly, I can tell you.
But in any event, Adrian, the question was our mindset. How do whites regain a positive, confident mindset in the...
and rule their own nation.
As we have been so mentally browbeaten for so long.
Well, I'd always... begin from a rather different angle. I think the biggest problem with our people, and particularly by that I mean peoples of Anglo-Saxon descent rather than the broader European family of peoples, is a tendency to hyper-individualism, which has been a very, very clear trait of our folk for a long time. If you perceive yourself as a member of a group with group interest, collective interest, if you like, to which you're loyal and which is loyal to you, that is a very, very different way of looking at things from the way that far too many of our people have, which is seeing things from purely an individualistic perspective. That is plainly a rather genetic trait. And with all traits that have evolved, it must have some evolutionary advantages. And I think they're very, very obvious. The same trait that made our people great explorers, great inventors, great pioneers in business, is the trait that makes them look upon themselves and perhaps only their immediate nuclear family as the only entities to which they really have a close allegiance. And that is obviously a weakness under other circumstances. If you have a society that consists entirely of your own people, it may not be quite such a weakness. If you come into conflict with other groups, it obviously is. And conflict doesn't necessarily mean military conflict. It might mean economic conflict. It might mean political conflict. In fact, it more often means those things than it does mean military conflict. So where I think we as a people have gone wrong is in prioritizing individual self-interest over all other things. And it's been in the loss of a sense of collective identity.
What you just said was so vitally important, and that is individualism versus people who work for the collective good, the good of their entire people. And that's something that whites have a problem with, and we need to certainly have a reckoning with. But I want to ask you this. In light of the black, and this goes directly to the heart of what's going on with nationalist groups in the UK, in light of the blacklisting and the denial of bank privileges suffered by Mark Collett and his patriotic alternative, is there any real hope for an electoral fight back by whites in Britain? And I would add this as an add-on to that question. What might be some extra electoral ways for our people to organize, resist, and regain control of our country? And, of course, we're not meaning anything illegal or untowards, but those are the questions. What's going on there? And I heard one leader from the UK tell me the electoral path is done, but our people are not done. Where do you line up with regard to that question?
What path do you have, then, if you don't have an electoral path?
Well, first of all, I don't necessarily agree with the premise that there isn't an electoral path. I think that is often, that tends to be put forward by two kinds of people. One kind of person is impatient, and that is usually the kind of person who advocates for that point of view. The other is the kind of person who, frankly, has tried it and not been very successful at it, and concludes that the reason why it hasn't worked out isn't any failing of the individual in questions or the organization in questions, is that it must be impossible. I tried, it didn't work, so nobody else could succeed at it. It's obviously a flawed logic.
Sour grapes, do we call it?
I'm sorry?
Sour grapes, it's called.
Look, if you look across Europe, and here's a very clear example I take. Country Europe, which has the most repressive laws, the most damaged collective psyche, and the worst political experience of the 20th century was Germany, for all sorts of reasons, like losing two world wars. Now, at the end of 20th century, it was only the end of the 1980s, before reunification, Germany could still be described as an economic giant and a political pygmy, and what it certainly didn't have was any kind of even remotely successful nationalist party. It had some old men who remembered the past, shall we say, and then it had a bunch of often asocial elements who enjoyed doing the most tabooized things in their society as a means of shocking their parents. Now it has, in Alternative for Deutschland, what a successful populist party that has gathered a large measure of support, admittedly more particularly in the former East Germany than in the West, but still a substantial measure of support across the whole of the country, under far more difficult political circumstances in many respects than those which exist in England. There is nothing in Great Britain that makes organising politically through the electoral process very difficult. It's a lot easier for us than it is for you. There are no difficulties about getting on the ballot here. To get on the ballot in the British parliamentary constituency, which is roughly equivalent to one of your congressional districts, you need to have a proposer, a second, and I forget whether it's 10 or 12 assenters. It's about 14 people in a constituency of an electorate of about 80,000. Well, try doing that in US congressional district. It's a lot more formidable task to register a third-party candidate than it is here. So, yes, there are aspects of the electoral system that work against all small parties, as they do in the US. The so-called first-past-the-post system works against them. But I think the reason why it hasn't been done here is, frankly, errors by some of the people who have tried to do it in the past have been a large contributory factor. The trouble is that in a radio program where I know you want to ask me questions from your listeners, I could talk about this subject for an hour or two, and we're not going to have an hour or two to do it. But
thankfully, the
short answer is, I don't think that there is any fundamental problem to making electoral progress in the United Kingdom, nor is there any great obstacle to organising countercultural type groups. If you want to run your own association for promoting, a book club or something designed to have a metapolitical activity, it's not especially difficult.
Well, you do have an establishment over there that's in charge, Adrian. It's, you know, we all thought Brexit was going to be this clean break and, it would be a new day dawning after that. Doesn't seem to have happened. Boris Johnson was supposed to be a great guy, a new change agent. That hasn't happened either.
No one who knows Boris Johnson has ever thought that he's a great guy. He is a serial adulterer, a pathological liar, lazy, vain, ambitious without knowing what he's ambitious
for. Sounds like a typical politician.
I think, to Keith's point, that's the way he's been presented over here, and so it's good to have someone with your insight on to set the record straight. That's why we're taking this march around the world. What a great answer. I mean, what great insight and commentary you've provided in this segment.
His predecessor, the much maligned Theresa May, she had many faults. But honestly, in terms of personal integrity, she's about 1,000 times better than he is.
Adrian, I got to tell you, I liked hearing your answer about the ability to organize and be successful, even though obviously we've had a string of defeats and things haven't gone our way in quite a while. Let me ask you this very quickly because the music is about to play again.
Yes.
Are you still waiting for that political messiah, so to speak? Is there anyone in British pro-white circles with the will and the wit to unite the smaller squabbling nationalist groups?
You know, there was a black Irishman from Jamaica called Bob Marley who wrote a song called Stand Up For Your Rights. There's more sense in that song than Waiting For The Messiah. There really is. There is no perfect human being who's going to be the Messiah. You've got to save yourselves. Too many people thought that Donald Trump was the Messiah.
That's right.
Say, I've got a better view of him than many of the more hardline nationalists in the U.S. do. But this is what.
Well, you certainly have a better view of Boris Johnson than we do.
No, I don't. I know more about him. Yeah.
Well, but no, again, that it's interesting, though, because that's the way he was presented over here. Now, I think at the at the end of the day, we knew that.
He was not a change agent.
No, certainly not. Certainly not. But in any event, stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We've got one more fleeting segment with the great Adrian Davis. Ladies and gentlemen, may I ask you, what is the KQ? You know, the kosher question. Most Americans will spend their entire lifetime purchasing food from the supermarkets while having no idea that almost every packaged food product on the grocery shelves is certified kosher. Indeed, the kosher question encompasses not only food and religion, but also affects our economics, politics, and our identity. In an effort to promote awareness to the kosher question, developers have published an app for your smartphone that features a database of food products that have not been kosher certified. The Kosher-tified app has prominent advertisement on TPC's homepage, or you can check out its website at thekosherquestion.com. With the cesspool of politics getting even deeper these days, why not leave the swamp and start eating in favor of your own interests? Check out thekosherquestion.com today and download the app.
Abby Johnson was once director of a Planned Parenthood clinic in Bryan, Texas. After a moral crisis, she quit, and now she campaigns against what she once endorsed.
They implement abortion quotas in all of their clinics.
What do you mean, quotas?
You have to perform a certain number of abortions every month. One of the reasons that I left...
Are they explicit about that?
Yes. It's in your budget, right there on the line item. One of the reasons I left Planned Parenthood was because in a budget meeting, I was told to double that abortion quota. And for me, as someone who had spoken to the media and had said, you know, we're about reducing the number of abortions, we're about, you know, prevention, all of these other services, I was shocked.
So since you actually worked at a Planned Parenthood, give us some sense of the relative number of abortions.
Okay, abortions, Planned Parenthood provides over 330,000 abortions a year. They are the largest single abortion provider in our country.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us, I guess, to a question that we had in from one of the listeners, and I'll let Keith take it away.
Adrian, what's with the monarchy? They seem to be hopelessly liberal. Prince Charles is a liberal twit. Then we have the Harry and Meghan soap opera. Is there any way that it can be salvaged, and can it be a rallying point for white nationalists or not?
Quite the contrary. The point of the monarchy is to give an impression of continuity in a time of radical change in which, frankly, the country has undergone a demographic transformation, I consider that it has a largely negative effect. It encourages people to wallow in nostalgia for a past that they have over-romanticized anyway, and to imagine that things will always be the same, even when whole parts of their country have been transformed into what are essentially alien lands, would, I should add, become the willing collusion of that institution. So I'm not a fan.
Well, neither are we. That's why we played the Sex Pistols.
Yes,
but, I'll admit, having never. Well, I guess if you go back far enough, of course, we came from there. I mean, so we have a little bit of a stake.
But that's
in
why
it.
We left.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I like some of the stories of some of the kings of the past. Henry VIII, obviously. I mean, interesting to say the least. Probably other adjectives you could use there. But what is
it was
the
just
British
an early coming of Boris Johnson?
What is the British's public's current feeling toward Harry, Meghan, and the royal family as it stands now? Because as Keith mentioned, soap opera, I see this insolent, this chronic malcontent Meghan, who is no princess by any standard of measurement, going on Oprah and spilling the secrets and just, wow.
And how do the English people feel about the fact they have a black princess before they had a cockney princess?
Well,
that seemed like a slap in the face of an average Englishman.
They embraced her with great enthusiasm, and then they discovered what happens when you clasp a snake to your bosom. I could have told them that beforehand, and all I can say about that is that pain is something from which we can sometimes learn. And those who don't learn from it are destined to repeat it. Yes, the whole thing is an unspeakably vulgar Hollywood soap opera of the ghastliest kind, and really and truly, it actually, to my mind, it sums up the institution. Add to that Andrew's cavorting at Epstein's paedophile island. Really and truly, there are limits.
Well, has the public opinion soured on the House of Windsor?
Are they ready to sack the Windsors
in light of her behavior?
I don't think that's going to be happening anytime soon, but foreigners have a strange view of the monarchy, which appeals to them, I think, far more than it does to most people in England. To us, it's all part of the furniture. It's always been there, except during Cromwell's reign, which was an awfully long time ago. And we can't imagine any other form of head of state for ceremonial purposes, and I don't think most people would wish to do away with it. But as to presenting a dignified image, the Queen does herself, but my goodness, her family do not. It does make
okay.
you wonder
well, that,
a
that,
about
that,
the next generation.
Well, Elizabeth is the only sane one out there, it seems to be, to me. You know, Prince Charles is a liberal twit. You know, Prince Harry, the fact that they would have a black princess before a cockney princess, that type of thing
look,
is just...
Adrian already mentioned it.
I know, but why in the world, you know, are they ready to sack the Windsors, or is that just like Old Man River going to keep rolling along?
Well, I think
it's
he already said it.
It's rolling along like Old Man River for a little while to come, though it is not impossible that the role of the monarchy in British society will be reassessed once Charles eventually becomes king. As somebody said to me, a very wise man, in fact, once said to me, Charles is not a lucky name for English kings. You know what?
All right, Adrian,
the
listen.
First one, don't you?
Absolutely.
We have covered, as you mentioned, I could have spent in the topic we were discussing in the second segment, the segment prior, we could have spent an hour minimum on that. With commercial radio, you always have to speed up the pace, and sometimes that's to our detriment. But we have about 5 minutes or so remaining with you. And I want to thank you again, my friend, for coming on and kicking off our march around the world. But I want to turn the floor completely over to you. What have we not covered from the perspective of a Brit that should be conveyed to the
world,
to the American audience, and in fact our worldwide audience? What would you like to share with us?
Well, I suppose what I'd say from our perspective at the moment is that we're going through a very strange time here with the extraordinary restrictions that our government has imposed upon ordinary life in Great Britain for the past year. So I wouldn't. What the question was really interesting is how England and the rest United Kingdom will look after COVID. And as we face up to the economic consequences of the government's handling of this crisis, it's rather like the, well, it's quite rather like the time of year we are. March in England is always the most disappointing month, I think. You think that spring is coming and then suddenly winter comes blasting back with full force. But with the saga of COVID, that is, I think, slowly coming to an end. I don't, incidentally, believe the conspiracy theories that say the government wants to maintain lockdown forever. I think that's another example of the government just being cowardly in the face of quack epidemiologists telling them the whole population will die if they tell people to take dirty pieces of cloth off their mouths. But what it has done is freeze political life on a single issue for a period of time. And what I'm trying to do, or would encourage people to do, is to try and think through that and beyond it. One of the great fallacies of thought into which we all fall is assuming that tomorrow will look like today.
That Adrian, is not let true. Let me just say this. Adrian, in America, you've got a particular section of the nation, namely the South, that's pushing back against the COVID restrictions. Is there anything like that going on in Great Britain?
I think there's a significant and vocal minority that doesn't like them, but don't forget that, or perhaps you don't know, our government's dealt with this in a very different way from yours. In particular, we now reach an extraordinary situation where there are many, many millions of people who, for the last year, have been sent home on four-fifths of their pay by the government to sit home and do no work. If someone would pay me four-fifths of my income for the rest of my life to sit at home and do no work, I can tell you I would read a great many books that I want to read. I'd write a great many articles that I want to write. I'd listen to a lot of music I want to hear. I'd be a very happy person. And there are about 9, 10, 11 million people in the United Kingdom out of a population of 67 billion who are being paid by the government not to work. When that ends, it will be very interesting. But strangely enough, there's not much dissent against the system that pays you four-fifths of your salary to do no work. It's good for the perspective of the recipient, at any rate. Not from the perspective of the taxpayer, but there you are.
Well, we have a segment of our population that feels the same way. It's called government employees. They're getting five-fifths of their salary for sitting at home and doing nothing.
Yeah, well, it's the same here. It's the same here. A very, very large percentage of the workforce is employed by either local or central government.
Adrian, apologies, but listen, I heard that with regard to COVID, if we're talking about this, of course, here in the United States, and we'll be talking about this more in the next hour, but several of the states have just abandoned all restrictions, and it happened as recently as this week, so this is a new development. But in the UK, it looks like that the government has announced two more COVID support payments that will stretch as late as until September, so it doesn't look like they're looking to abandon the status quo anytime soon.
No, that's for different reason. The economy isn't suddenly going to bounce back when the restrictions are lifted. The government's great fear is as soon as it stops paying people's wages, their employers will dismiss them because they can't afford to pay them. At which point there will suddenly be several million unemployed people who are very, very angry. Somebody once described gratitude in politics as a lively sense of favours yet to come. Those people who've been drawing four-fifths of their salary for doing no work will not be grateful to the government for that if they do not have a job in August. They will be very, very angry, and they will not at all remember the largesse that has been lavished on them out of the public purse. They will be enraged, and the government's afraid of that, and rightly so.
Interesting. Well, see, this is why we have these guests on. These are great answers that we couldn't get from being outside of the country. Do you have any realistic hope, Adrian, that the UK will return to normal? That's a relative term, at least with regard to COVID, in the current year?
It depends what you mean by normal. That most of the restrictions will be lifted, yes. But the country will return to the same level of economic activity which it was before. No, I don't think that's going to happen. I think the government has seriously underestimated the harm that its measures have done. And the consequences of that will be serious.
Well, is that going to be a grand opportunity for our side, for, you know,
it'd be a grand opportunity for anyone who can put forward a coherent alternative. a subject upon which perhaps you should get an opinion from my friend Peter Rushton, who I think you're having on your program next week, is
correct.
How much prospect there is of organizing to take advantages of the opportunities that are certainly coming. I dare to quote Mussolini on your program. He once said that what was wanting to save Italy was not measures but men, and that is rather our problem here at the moment.
That is a fantastic quote to end this hour on. Adrian, you've certainly set a high standard for the rest of our guests this special series match. I thank you for it. Thanks for staying up late. We will be talking with Peter Rushton from the UK next week, and a lot more incredible guests like Adrian Davis to come.